Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Walmart workers are asking citizens to make a pledge not to shop at the big box store on Black Friday. That's the biggest shopping day of the year, the day after Thanksgiving. Workers say if their demands are not met, they might walk off the job on Black Friday. On October 9th, Walmart workers in 12 cities walked off the job, calling for living wages and an end to retaliation for speaking out. All eyes are on Walmart currently, because it's the first time workers have walked off the job in the company's 50-year history. Walmart's 1.4 million workers are not unionized. So what protections do they have? While most of us are sleeping, Pam Davis is stocking shelves at Walmart. And like thousands of other Walmart workers across the country, she has been taking part in leading actions against her employer to protest unfair treatment and unfair pay. She's a member of the group R Walmart, that's a non-unionized entity of workers organizing to demand basic rights on the job. Hi, Pam. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, how are you, Rose?
Good, thank you. Thanks for joining us. And what about other workers? We're talking domestic workers, taxi drivers, day laborers, farm workers, restaurant workers. They're not union workers. So how are they organizing? And what types of actions have been successful? Kimmy Lee is national coordinator with the United Workers Congress. That's a federation of workers organizing in the U.S., all non-union. They started 2 years ago at the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit. Hi, Kimmy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Josh Idelson. Josh covers labor as a contributing writer at Salon and In These Times. And Josh spent 5 years as a union organizer for Unite Here in Sacramento, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia. Hi, Josh. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me back, Rose.
It's great to have you. So, Josh, I want to start off with you. I'm hoping that your line is okay. Can you just paint us a picture of what we are currently facing with so many more workers entering the workforce who are not union?
Sure. So in the early 90s, when Rutgers academic Janice Fine took a look at the country and tried to add up all of the groups that weren't unions, but were organizing workers and mobilizing workers, she found about a dozen. Her tally now, 20 years later, is over 200. So there's been this very quick bloom in groups that mobilize workers, organize workers, but don't have, and in most cases aren't looking for, recognition as unions under the law. You see them in all kinds of industries, in part because so many workers don't even have the option under law, even on paper, of unionizing, whether because they're domestic workers, because they're considered independent contractors on paper, because they're wrongly considered managers. We're talking about people from farm workers to fashion models to college athletes who still have issues in the workplace that they've organized to take on. The other reason that we see the rise of these groups, though, is even if on paper you have the right to have the union, U.S. law and union busting have made that right very difficult to achieve. And so we see some workers turning to other ways to try to get some measure of justice, some measure of democracy in the workplace.
And so what does the law currently say? What sorts of protections do these non-union workers actually have?
So when it comes to the right to go on strike, for example, which the Walmart workers have exercised, actually, on paper, non-union workers have an even greater right to go on strike than a union member does, because union contracts, unless the contract is expired, generally prevent you from going on strike. And that's part of the concession, part of the labor piece that employers get in those contracts. If you're a non-union worker, as long as it's collective action, you have the right to go on strike without being retaliated against as a group, with a very important qualifier, which is, in most cases, the company can permanently replace you. In other words, they can fill your job with someone else and not let you have your job back. And the law doesn't consider that in and of itself to be a punishment. Now, if you show you're going out on strike over so-called unfair labor practices, like these Walmart workers say they are, that you're responding to a violation of the labor law, then you have a little more protection.
And Pam, you work at the Walmart in Richmond. While most of us are sleeping, you're stocking shelves for 10:45 an hour. And I understand that your D-Day is coming up, because if you call in sick again to take action, you'll be fired. Is that right?
Yes. If I call out sick, I'll be terminated.
And did your manager tell you this? Can you just talk a little bit about how that process has worked behind the scenes?
Yes. I've been there for 18 months in Walmart Hilltop, and I have an illness, a chronic illness that keeps me out, and I didn't get the FMLA protection. Anyway, so I've been out ill quite a few times, so if I call out any more, it's been brought to my attention since I've joined our Walmart, that if I call out again, I'll be terminated. There's no questions asked.
And what, in terms of your rights on the workplace, have you gotten together with all our Walmart to find out what rights you actually have?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And so, based on your understanding, what are your rights as a non-union worker?
Right now, we're not a union yet.
Right, non-union.
Okay.
Yeah.
A non-union worker. The rights I have, why wasn't there a punishment before I joined our Walmart? So it seems like it's some sort of retaliation right now. So I am going to be protected under the ULP for unfair labor practices. Because right now the way you get an absence excused is through a manager's approval. So if you have a legitimate doctor's excuse, that does not decide if it's going to be excused or not. It's at the store level, and a manager has to approve it for you.
And Kimmy, why don't you jump in on this? The United Workers Congress started 2 years ago at the U.S. Social Forum, and you are organizing domestic workers, taxi drivers, day laborers, farm workers, restaurant workers. We're seeing the number of organizations grow. Are we also seeing the number of workers demanding their rights, non-union workers?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think that's why you see this rise that Josh was talking about, is over the last 20 years, you've seen a really significant increase of worker centers and independent organizing, because the unions have not been able to account for all these other workers, right? The unions have been concentrating on the larger industries and the more traditional ones, but you have millions and millions of workers that have not been organized, but need these rights and need to organize and need to get together. And so we've seen worker centers really, really grow, and we've been winning victories independent in very creative ways.
And tell us about some of those victories.
Yeah, so for example, we have the farm workers with the Coalition for Immokalee Workers in Florida. They've been creating agreements with the actual buyers of tomatoes, right? So you've got Taco Bell and Yum Brands and, you know, these really large corporations. They've gotten them to agree to the one penny per pound agreement, so that the farm workers didn't have to formally form a union, but you got the buyers to pay the, you know, to make sure that workers at the bottom of the chain were getting a certain amount of pay. So that's a little bit different way of trying to organize and really create. It's kind of collective creative bargaining, right? That these workers got together. They didn't have a union, but they did get together to make demands on the corporations at the top, right? And then we have guest workers that are organizing. Right now, you know, a lot of companies are trying to subcontract out or bring guest workers in, and a lot of times people would say, oh, you know, those workers don't speak English, they don't have rights. Guest workers then are tied to that employer. So if they, you know, they can't just quit because they've been brought over here specifically by that employer. So we have folks that are organizing guest workers to try to help protect those workers and give them something so that they aren't under the constant pressure of that one employer.
And Josh, you cover this issue. You're also a longtime organizer. What would you say actually works when it comes to non-union organizing?
Sure. So I think the first thing to understand is that these groups are not as different from unions as people think, in that unions have found over and over, the ones who've been paying attention, the folks within unions who've been paying attention, that American labor law is broken. And so any place you see a union winning over the past few years, it tends to be not through the law, but through the same kinds of tactics that these non-union groups are using. And many of them are using a range of tactics that overlap. So those include industrial action, having workers go on strike or demonstrate. They include lawsuits over often not labor law per se, but issues like wage theft and discrimination. It includes customer power, boycotts, threats of boycotts. It includes political power, whether it's passing laws to improve conditions in the workplace or going through zoning or laws to threaten an employer. It can include helping high-road employers, highlighting those companies that are doing good things and shaming the companies that are doing bad things. And when you have an array of these tactics, and particularly when you combine them with industrial activism and with media and getting the story out, you can have some real leverage with companies, whether or not you have any kind of union recognition on paper.
And Pam, what would you say has been most effective for Walmart workers? Because your actions have received quite a lot of media attention, simply because this is the first time that workers have walked off the job in Walmart's 50-year history. And it has been incredible to see workers standing in line or standing in front of stores and sometimes even in the store holding signs and talking about the need for living wages.
I think it's great. I think the most effective is when we show up at home office unannounced. Mm. And it's like the first time it was 100, then the second time is we doubled the group. And this year we've gone twice already. I think those are the most effective.
And by home office, do you mean in Bentonville, Arkansas?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So we
went to the shareholders meeting the first time in June. And then the last meeting we went in October, we went to the investors meeting.
And you went to both of those?
Oh, yes.
But so what was that experience like? And you all showed up unannounced. I understand that you actually met with a high-level Walmart executive.
Yes, they come outside. They won't let us. Well, they let us in one at a time. We are, because we're employed, most of us are employees,
right.
Current employees, we're entitled to go in. So, of course, they let us go in the first time to do an open door. An open door is when you ask a member of management to listen to your issues. Okay, and that's what we're trying to get away from. We don't want an open door anymore. So then the second time we went, it was an investors meeting there. So the people that are investing in Walmart, I'm sure they heard us. We didn't get to see them because they met us in the parking lot. And they kept us at bay. So we went to the meeting where they were having the actual meeting. We did our protest outside, and I'm sure they could hear us.
And so what was the meeting like with the high-level executive? But clearly, you're making an impact. There was a leaked memo, which we'll talk about later in the show. But to meet with a high-level exec, they've got to be talking about this behind closed doors.
They're talking about it, but when they come across it in the media, they're just playing it down. Like, that was just they're not even a factor of the 12,000 employees we have in Southern California. Those 200 people who showed up, that doesn't even mean anything. It's like, that's a small percentage. But we're, like, on the front lines talking with the customers and engaging other allies to come along with us. So it's going to get bigger. It's already grown leaps and bounds already.
And as it continues to grow with not only the workers in the stores, but also the warehouse workers, and these are contracted workers, have you seen any changes, tangible changes, because of this?
On the inside of the store, no. I haven't seen any changes there. They're just really aware of us, and they keep us apart from other workers now so that we don't engage in conversations because they think that we're only talking about organizing. And that's not the truth. We're educating, but we're not always talking about organizing.
And that is Pam Davis. She's a worker at the Richmond Walmart, and she stocks shelves overnight, making now $10.45 an hour, making actually 5 cents less than when she started. She used to be a department manager making $11.10 an hour, but stepped down because she says it was ridiculous and a ridiculous amount of work for that amount of pay. And as I'm sure most of you know, Walmart workers across the country are walking out of stores. It's the first time this has happened in the company's 50-year history. In some cases, they are marching through the stores with their signs, and they are asking citizens to make a pledge not to shop at the big box store on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. There's going to be a Bay Area community briefing with our Walmart workers Saturday, November 10th from 10 to 12 at the California Nurses Association, 2000 Franklin Street, close to the 19th Street BART station in Oakland. And we'll put more information on our website about that. We're also joined today by Kimmy Lee, National Coordinator with the United Workers Workers Congress. They started 2 years ago at the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit. And they are working with non-union domestic workers, taxi drivers, day laborers, farm workers, and restaurant workers. We're also joined by Josh Idelson. He covers labor as a contributing writer at Salon and In These Times. He spent 5 years as an organizer with Unite Here. And we'd love to hear from you. If you are a non-union worker, how are you organizing to ensure better working conditions? What do you think actually works? And if you have any questions or comments for our guest today, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. The fact is, the non-union workforce is growing drastically. So what is in store for their future, and what actions actually work on the ground? 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. I face, which I think many people do under these circumstances, a conundrum. On the one hand, my first response, let's just take Walmart as an example. My first response when I feel that the workers want something that the Walmart isn't giving them is say, that's right, let's boycott them. Right away, that's the first reaction I think that many people would have, and I'll send a letter to them saying I'm boycotting them, or an email these days. At any rate, on the other hand, I recognize that if there's an effective, or if a lot of people boycott it, then the very workers who I want to support may very well lose their jobs because Walmart isn't doing much as much business. And I'd appreciate the perspective of the worker about how they feel about people entering into a boycott under such circumstances.
Yeah, it's a great question. And stay on the line, William, because maybe you can go back and forth with Pam. So, Pam, what are your thoughts on William's concerns about possibly not shopping, for example, at Walmart on the day after Thanksgiving, or not shopping there at all?
It concerns me, too, because I'm a stockholder, and I'm a mother and a grandmother. So, I mean, I need the money as well, but there comes a time when you just have to make a stand, and it's something that I really, truly believe in. I mean, I've lived here all my life, and I've seen what Walmart has done to the community, and I choose to make a stand, and I'm standing up for the people that cannot stand up.
So, are you calling for people to boycott Walmart altogether?
Yes. You can shop. There's many other stores, Target, where else? You can even shop online if you want to. We just want you to stay out of the stores today.
You could go to your local independent stores, those that are still left. William, would you like to respond to Pam?
I was sort of surprised when she said, as her first concerns about, you know, I'm a stockholder. That was sort of, you know, threw me off a little bit. But let's put that on the side. I'm going to assume she's not a major stockholder in Walmart. and I'm sort of saying, if we didn't shop there, not just how I shouldn't have said just how you feel about, but also how you feel that other workers feel about that problem, which if business goes down, Walmart will just say, we don't need as many workers, and your fellow and sister workers may have their hours cut back and or actually lose their jobs.
Pam, what are your thoughts?
Walmart needs workers. That's an operation. It's a humongous store. They need the workers. Right now, they're even sourcing out workers. We don't even have enough employees. We're hiring temporaries. Mm. We just had a big store remodel. So, therefore, we enlarged our food area. And so we need workers to keep that stocked around the clock. The store is open from 6 a.m. to midnight.
Wow.
So that needs to be stocked. There's over
6 a.m.
I forget what the store count is, what the customer count is in that store. But it's high. It's a high turnover. It's in a mall.
Do people actually go to Walmart at 6 in the morning?
Yes, they do.
Wow.
People that are getting off, it's usually people that are getting off of a graveyard job.
Oh.
Or somebody is trying to get their last minute things on the way to work.
Right.
Because we're right off the freeway.
And Pam, the big thing, we heard so much about Walmart refusing to hire people full-time so they don't have to give them benefits. What is your workload like at Walmart? Are you full-time or part-time?
I'm part-time. I was hired on full-time, and I volunteered to go part-time. I had to take on another job that paid more to help with income because I was making my wages were just too low.
Right, because now you make $10.45, so you actually have two jobs.
Yes, I have to.
And same question to you, Kimmy, from William. What are you hearing from workers in terms of, you know, how citizens should respond to this? Because you often hear for calls for boycotts.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, the bigger picture is these corporations are huge. And while a boycott will maybe impact a little bit, Walmart is not going to go down. Like, Walmart is one of the largest retailers in the world. So it is more of a symbolic gesture to kind of concentrate folks and ask folks to take a step aside and say, hey, we're consumers and we care about where, you know, what's happening to these goods, to these workers, this whole thing. So, you know, in the end, Walmart is not going to shut down at any time soon or cut its workers. I think that's, you know, that in this case, Walmart would not do that. In smaller instances, that the whole point of a strike is to disrupt, right, so that the owners will respond. And so, yes, there may be some small push on their income for a little bit, but, you know, the idea is to reach a settlement. We don't want workers out of a job, of course. What we want is them to respond and treat their workers well, and everyone would be happy.
And Josh, in the case of Walmart, they have not responded yet. Pam says there are no tangible differences inside the store. What are your thoughts on that? Where do you think this is going? And in terms of organizing, what will it take to see some differences?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question, and this is something I'll be continuing to write about at Salon. It's interesting that the group of workers recently that a high-level Walmart manager did agree to meet with collectively was a group of warehouse workers, a few of them, who are in Walmart's supply chain but aren't direct employees. I think what nobody knows is what is going on behind closed doors as Walmart games out its solution here. What is already striking, though, is that in the past, based on allegations and based on conclusions that were reached by the National Labor Relations Board, Walmart has been very quick and very intense in its willingness to bring down the hammer on workers. And so the fact that a couple weeks after people went on strike, we're talking about, and I've heard from workers that I've talked to who went on strike, a lack of retaliation is striking. The fact that there are dozens of allegations that workers were retaliated against for things like participating in a local meeting or a local demonstration or just speaking up at work, but the same workers say they weren't retaliated against for going on strike shows a change. And I think the change is not the law. The change is Walmart is actually in the spotlight. And the change is that there are both consumers and politicians and news consumers watching, but even more so, there are a lot of Walmart workers watching now who didn't go on strike, waiting to see what happened, who may not have been watching before there was a strike. So I think what Walmart is wrestling with is it better to bring terror down on folks in order to suppress this, or is that going to make the situation for them worse?
Right. And that is Josh Idelson. He covers labor at Salon in these times. Spent 5 years as a union organizer with Unite Here. We're also joined today by Kimmy Lee, national coordinator with the United Workers Congress. They work to organize domestic workers, taxi drivers, day laborers, farm workers, and restaurant workers. I'd especially like to talk about restaurant workers and taxi drivers after the break because we rarely hear about those workers organizing. We're also joined by Pam Davis. She stocks shelves at Walmart, making $10.45 an hour. This is really her first time getting involved in organizing. She has gone to Bentonville, Arkansas, Walmart headquarters twice, and she says that if she calls in sick one more time, she will most likely be fired. If you're a non-union worker, we'd love to hear from you. How are you organizing, and what do you think is most effective to ensure a better working conditions? It's your call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this.
A show that depends on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255, or please post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org. You can also find links there related to today's show, and that's where you can also sign up for the show's weekly email newsletter. Just click the email newsletter link on the right side of the page at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will have a conversation about media coverage of the election, the machinery behind the Democratic Party, and also the media and their coverage of President Obama's record on domestic and foreign policy and what's to come. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll be joined by the Middle East Report's Chris Tozing, Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez, and Time Magazine's Michael Shear, who just wrote a fascinating piece about the machinery behind the Democratic Party. And then on Monday, we will talk about the changing demographics of this country, not just race, but also age. There's a growing group of single women in this country and how that is going to change voting from here on out, and also people's demands. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about how non-union workers are organizing. This population is growing drastically. So how are they organizing? If you're a non-union worker, we would love to hear from you. Actually, someone on Facebook, Billy, just posted an article from the East Bay Express, March of last year, that says Berkeley Bowl, that's the natural health food store, grocery store over in Berkeley, will remain non-union for the foreseeable future. The workers of the Oregon Street store voted 82-73 against membership in the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 5. In June, they voted to decertify the union. But according to the East Bay Express, the National Labor Relations Board said Bowl management interfered unfairly with the election and scheduled a new vote. So interesting things really happening also in our own backyards. And if you've got any stories to share about maybe voting yes or no to join a union, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment on our website. We're joined by Pam Davis, a Walmart worker over in Richmond. She stocks shelves, making $10.45 an hour, and she is heavily organizing with our Walmart for the first time ever. Kimmy Lee, national coordinator with the United Workers Congress. They organize taxi drivers, restaurant workers, day laborers, farm workers, domestic workers. And Josh Idelson covers labor for Salon and In These Times. He spent 5 years as a union organizer. And we have full lines, so let's go to Orlando, Florida, and let's hear from Angela. Hi, Angela. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you? I understand you are a former Walmart worker.
Yes, I am. I was working for them for this past year and was terminated in May for organizing workers in my store. And I'm fighting that with the Department of Labor. I've filed unfair labor practice charges on Walmart for retaliation.
And can you talk about what happened exactly?
What was that?
What happened exactly?
They were understaffing our store, and then they were holding us accountable for, you know, the workloads of 2 to 3 people, and they started writing people up on production issues, and which was unfair because to me it was management's fault for understaffing us. So I started writing letters to the managers and getting people's written thrown out of their file due to, you know, lack of staffing that led to the lack of production. Then they would schedule you. They cut our hours, and let's say you had a 17-hour week. Well, if they'd ask you to stay or you had to stay to finish your work to keep from getting the production write-up, at the end of the pay period, before they would put time in for the pay period, they would come around with a clipboard with your name on it and say, hey, Angela, you've got 10 minutes or an hour over your 17 hours for the week, so we need you to go home an hour early or take an extra hour of unpaid lunch to give that time back.
10 minutes?
And so I started rallying others to stop giving their time back as well until they started staffing our stores.
And what did you do for Walmart?
I worked in the deli.
And can I ask how much you made?
I was a lucky one. They started me out at $9.45 an hour. I believe that was because I worked for them years ago as a customer service manager, and that had something to do with my pay.
And why do you say you were a lucky one at $9.45 an hour?
Because the average worker, you're usually many workers make minimum wage, which in Florida is $7.60 an hour, and the average pay for an average Walmart worker is $8.61 an hour. Although Walmart claims that the average pay for an average Walmart worker is $12.41 an hour across the country.
Did you have any benefits?
No, ma'am, I didn't. I was part-time, and you have to be at Walmart for 2 years before you qualify for health insurance.
So you got fired, Angela. What are you doing now?
Now, well, for a couple of months, I just went on the campaign and had a lot of support from my family while I wasn't working, and went on the campaign with our Walmart and visited 9 states within a couple of months, organizing workers from different stores. And I now am working for the organization with the USCW to help organize these workers.
And also, before we let you go, Angela, what do you think actually works for non-union workers? Because we're also joined by Pam Davis, who works at Walmart in Richmond, California. And she says that so far they haven't seen any tangible differences. What do you think will actually work?
There actually has been some differences. I mean, our organization that Pam belongs to, and I do as well, and Pam and I have met and at different rallies and things like that. We have had some small victories in each store. I've had to, you know, we work as like a kind of a union, but we're not protected under contracts or anything like that. And we have no bargaining power. So in order to have things done, we just have to stand together. Such as I led a sit-in in my former store that I worked at for a 10-year worker. That's a 59-year-old man that had medical condition with his blood clots in his legs. He had medical documentation, submitted 3 separate letters from his doctors, just simply asking for a stool to sit on during his 8-hour shift. Mm. Walmart refused to give it to him, so they were breaking their own policy, plus, you know, federal policies. And so I led a sit-in and sat in the store for 4 hours. And within 11 hours, they gave Richard Vincent his stool to have during his shifts. And those are the things that we have to do to get a dignity that we deserve and our rights that we're, you know, that is owed to us in the stores. As far as non-union workers taking action, just because they don't belong to a union or an organization, they're still protected under national labor rights and laws. And that is that they can practice concerted activity and they can join the strikes due to unfair labor practices and the retaliations that Walmart is dishing out to everyone for speaking out.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Angela. Angela's calling in from Orlando, Florida. Former Walmart worker, she says she was fired for speaking out, making $9.45 an hour. And I just was looking at Walmart profits here. Last quarter, the U.S. division's revenue rose almost 4% to $67 billion. $67 billion just for one quarter. Thank you for calling. Richard called and he couldn't stay on the line. He wanted to mention that Costco does allow unions and says he'd like to know more about big box stores that actually treat their workers well. Do you know, can you name some names, Josh?
So Costco is an exception. Costco isn't perfect. It actually, for example, was sued over allegedly breaking workers' comp laws and how they handle OSHA claims, as well as gender discrimination. But in the scheme of things, Costco is an outlier as a more progressive company in that it has not fought unionization as aggressively as other companies. It has a union contract with the Teamsters. It has a union-like standard at many of its non-union locations. And it has not exerted the kind of downward pull on the economy that these other big box stores are. On the other hand, Target, union organizers have said the main difference between Target and Walmart is just that Target is smaller. And one of the points that Nelson Lichtenstein, the UCSB professor, makes is that the Walmart's impact on the economy extends even beyond the consumers and the 1.4 million workers that it has, and that Walmart's competitors, in scrambling to keep up, have been following many of Walmart's labor practices. And so what we see in this fight against Walmart is really a fight over what the service sector economy is going to look like in the United States. And for the moment, Costco has maintained a somewhat higher standard than Walmart. In fact, the New York Times had a strange article a few years ago, a good article, with some strange comments from shareholders complaining that they're being left out, that the workers and the consumers are benefiting, and Costco isn't worrying enough about its shareholders.
Also, Stephen Greenhouse wrote about this a few years ago, and he said that Costco's CEO is one of the few that is not taking like a multi-million-dollar salary because he wanted the playing field to be a little more leveled. Is that true? Am I remembering this correctly?
Yes, that's right. And I think this is where public policy comes in also, in that Costco has shown, again, it's not a perfect company, but it's shown you can have a profitable company with low prices and pay your workers more.
Right.
And there are ways that you get a benefit back in terms of turnover and so on. And there was an attempt years ago in the mid-2000s to use the democratic process to make it easier to be a Costco and harder to be a Walmart by requiring companies to pay either for health insurance or for the cost of government health insurance for their own workers. And unfortunately, courts rejected, for example, in Maryland, that attempt to use the political process to put some more democracy into the economy.
Well, we have a related question on this. Let's hear from Harry in San Francisco. Hi, Harry.
Yes, good morning, Rose. I wanted to know how much, what the benefits and salaries are at Target. Target was able to get their way into San Francisco through,
right,
you know, bribing nonprofits and using lobbyists and so forth. But I'm curious to know what the actual difference is in wages, because what she's talking about is not a living wage in San Francisco.
I'm glad you brought this up, Harry. I always forget that we now have a Target in San Francisco. We don't have...
We're going to have two.
Oh, we are?
Yeah. The other one's going to be where Mervyn's was.
Oh, okay. I didn't...
There's this huge, ugly logo. It's very emblematic of American society, a Target, you know.
Well, thank you for calling, Harry. The new Target is right downtown. I mean, you cannot miss the big signs. Is Target unionized, Josh?
Target is generally almost entirely, if not entirely, non-union. And
okay.
In fact, in Gulfstream in New York, there was a unionization effort, and I wrote about a worker who was fired who had been very active, who the company, the best excuse they could come up with for firing her was something like having along the lines of having a bad attitude. And the company got away with it and defeated the unionization drive there.
And how do the wages differ between Walmart and Target?
They're similar. The wages in both cases are similar. And in fact, even when we see union grocery stores, for example, look at the Southern California grocery strike about 10 years ago, when we used to have an economy where union companies were forcing non-union companies to pay better, and in some cases we do. Now we have an economy where a non-union company like Walmart is driving down the wages and the benefits, even at unionized competitors.
Well, that was another question we have from a listener. Are Teamsters and unions actually helping these non-union workers by showing up in force at mass demonstrations?
So there's a really interesting history here in that about a decade ago or two, there was much more distrust between these kinds of non-traditional labor organizations and unions. That's really changed. And so now the AFL-CIO, for example, is investing in a fund to support collaborations between non-traditional organizing groups and unions. The National Domestic Workers Alliance and the National Taxi Workers Alliance have both affiliated with the AFL-CIO and become formally recognized as part of the U.S. labor movement that the AFL-CIO represents. And on the local level, one of the interesting trends is that where there are workers who legally have the right to organize, like car wash workers, increasingly we see these non-traditional groups teaming up with unions to try to get legal recognition and collective bargaining as a union for those workers.
Kimmy, is the United Workers Congress working with unions?
Yes, exactly what Josh was saying. Our members are. So the domestic workers, the day laborers, they have signed agreements with the AFL-CIO, and actually the taxi workers have signed a charter, which is a little bit different. But yes, definitely at the local level, there's been more partnerships, and at the national level, we are working together.
And tell us a little bit more about, for example, taxi drivers organizing.
Yeah, so what we've seen is across the country in major cities that taxi workers have gotten together, they don't necessarily have the funds or the resources to be fully staffed, but they are creating their own alliances. So in Los Angeles, And in Pennsylvania and in D.C. and in New York, like, there are kind of these new groupings of taxi workers coming together. And then the New York taxi workers are the ones that really push forward with the AFL charter. And so hopefully trying to get the rest of the country aligned. But around the country, there's been these sparks of taxi workers trying to organize themselves.
And what about restaurant workers?
So restaurant workers, one of the largest groups organizing them is called ROC United, Restaurant Opportunity Center. And so right now, less than 1% of restaurant workers are part of a union. Mm. And so ROC has been has a national effort to try and reach out and organize these workers. They've got about 17 different locations right now. New York was where they were for about 7-8 years. They started after 9/11 with restaurant workers that lost their jobs because the World Trade Center, they're at a restaurant on the top of the World Trade Center, actually. They worked with those workers to create a worker co-op and actually open a restaurant itself. And from that, though, that really sparked this need that all restaurant workers need to be organized. And so ROC then grew into a national entity, and now they're organizing in 17 different locations.
Wow. And we just got an email from Harry, who pointed us to the, Henry, the Unite Here Local 2850 website. They report that non-union food service workers at Oakland International Airport are rising up. They are demanding that their employers respect their rights and agree to a fair process for workers to decide whether to join a union. They've got a number of photos of workers with their short stories. For example, Aribun Lee says, after 4 years, I still make just $9 an hour at the Oakland Airport Sees Candy, and I have $16,000 in medical debt because I need surgery and I have no insurance. Misha Adams says, my dream is to be a doctor and give back to my community, but financial aid keeps getting cut. I cannot afford rent and tuition on what I make. Rinaz Nisha, my friends at the non-union restaurants in the airport work just as hard as I do, but they're not being treated equally. So thank you so much. So restaurant workers and food service workers at Oakland International are also organizing, and we'll put links on our website after the show. Today we are talking about how non-union workers, a growing population in the United States, how they are organizing for better working conditions and an end to retaliation. We're joined today by Josh Idelson. He covers these issues for Salon and In These Times. He spent 5 years as an organizer with Unite Here. Kimmy Lee, national coordinator with the United Workers Congress. They organize a number of non-union workers, including taxi drivers, farm workers, restaurant workers. And Pam Davis works as an overnight stocker. She stocks the shelves at the Richmond Walmart, making $10.45 an hour, and she is heavily involved with the group R Walmart. And if you'd like to join us, we have just about 8 minutes left, 866-798-8255. What is most effective? If you're a non-union worker, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think actually works for these workers? What will it take, for example, for these Walmart workers to see some changes? 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment on our website or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Pam, we just had a caller who couldn't stay on the line. They wanted to know if you're getting paid to organize with our Walmart.
No. That's so funny. No, I'm not.
So you're nope. A mother, a grandmother, you've got two jobs, and you are also organizing.
Yes.
And
my son is grown. My grandkids are 13, 9, and 6.
Okay, and I understand this is really the first time that you've been politically active.
It is.
What got you to become an organizer?
The passion for the workers that I saw them living at poverty level. Mm. And I've made quite a bit. I've been in jobs where I've made quite a bit more money, and I was able to do the better things and have houses and cars. And at this level, I'm not. And it's like a hands-on experience. And I'm seeing other workers suffer, and they have smaller, you know, smaller kids. They're younger families. And I just don't know how they make it.
And you used to work at AT&T, which was unionized.
Oh, yes, yes.
But you say that union was pretty weak.
It was out of the two unions that that was in. I was there when it was Pacific Bell, then it transferred over to AT&T. So out of the two unions, we were of the weaker union, and I had a bad taste about unions when I worked there.
What do you think about them now? Because our Walmart specifically doesn't say that they're after, that they're trying to become unionized. They simply want better wages, an end to retaliation, an end to sex discrimination, that kind of thing. Can you talk about that?
Yes. I mean, our Walmart, yes, the UFCW, they help us with our ULPs, you know, the unfair labor practices. They help us on how to approach the managers, how to educate the other employees or other associates that are within the store. And right now we're just trying to break that barrier with the employees that are so loyal to the company that they don't even want to listen. So that's what they're trying to teach us now, how to engage all the associates that they do have rights as workers.
Well, maybe you can answer Diane's next question, because she's been wondering how to organize as a preschool teacher. Hi, Diane. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Similar to the last caller, I had a little bit of a distaste for unionizing just based on past experience. However, I've been at preschool in the early childhood world for about 12 years, and I recently had the idea that it would be great to unionize just in terms of making sure that we get our breaks and fair pay. And often, you know, preschool workers are sort of unseen, and our environments are less than hospitable, yet they're, you know, it really varies. It's just a huge spectrum there, and for both the children and the teachers. And I know that standardization sometimes brings a negative thing, just like I was saying earlier about my experience with unions, but I was just wondering if there's a way to start some kind of a organization process to determine whether or not we could create a healthy union that would help protect us and bring us all up to livable wages.
You know, Diane, preschool teachers, they were not even on my radar, so I'm so glad you called in. Is this something that you're all talking about, and are you planning to take some kind of action soon?
I wouldn't say that we're organized at all at this point, because so many of us are kind of exhausted at the end of the day and working long hours with toddlers. And
right.
Specifically exhausting. Many of us work 8-hour shifts, and I know that sounds like very normal to most people, but it's just a different kind of energy gets sucked out of you. So, and without breaks, like I said, and with difficulty with taking lunch breaks, we never do that or have time on the computer or anything like that. So, no, there's no organization that I know of yet, but perhaps there's something I could do to help.
Yes.
Or, in fact, maybe you could direct me, or else I can search in my own way through different organizations.
Stay on the line in case you have a follow-up. Kimmy, what advice would you give to Diane?
Yeah, actually, there's a whole slew of educators that are outside of contracts and tenure. And so if you look at the universities, the majority of people teaching actually are outside of a contract and are temporary workers. And so there is actually their name is escaping me, but COCAL is the initials of it. They just had a conference, and a global conference actually, around educators who are outside of the union. And so there are folks talking about it. And, you know, really for your situation, it depends on your coworkers. And, you know, you guys could create a contract without a union. So, I mean, there's two parts of it where you can try to create a contract just for your workplace. But if you guys wanted to unionize and connect to some union that exists, then, you know, we could definitely help figure that out for you. But there's definitely, obviously, the teachers' unions and educators, there's different places to go for that. So,
and it's just preschool age is somehow overlooked, I think. Perhaps I'm wrong about that. And where I work is currently fine. It's more that I know about what it used to be like and what it's still like for many people.
Yeah, there are folks trying to organize childcare, like daycare providers, mm-hmm. as well. In California, I don't know, but I know there's some on the East Coast, so we can try and make some connections for you.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, Diane, and we'll put some links at yourcallradio.org that will hopefully help you out. Thank you. And we've got time for one more quick caller. Let's hear from Lawrence in Berkeley. Hi, Lawrence. It's been a while.
Yeah, hi. I'm getting up earlier. Hi, Rose. Yeah, we need an entirely new labor movement. And the reason has been mentioned already is that now 80% of workers in this country are service workers. And the labor movement was based on industrial workers. And the characteristics of service workers is that they meet with the neighbors. They meet with the community every day. And also, The workers can be fired, but the community can't. Therefore, the service workers, which is the great majority of workers, have to organize together with the community. And the community people who will be organizing their own co-ops and their own collective works in the neighborhood have to be able to organize workers in the stores and in the schools and in the health groups near them, so that you have to have one union that will involve both workers and community and neighborhood members.
Well, Lauren, thanks for calling. Sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time, and I just want to get final thoughts in response to that and all the other comments we got today. Pam, final thoughts from you? We've got about 30 seconds.
At this point, we're not going to stop doing what we're doing. We're looking for dignity and respect. We want to end the retaliation. We want better working conditions, and we want to meet with Walmart execs and meet them as a group, not one-on-one.
And that's Pam Davis. She works at Walmart in Richmond. And again, speaking of bringing the community together, there is a community briefing with our Walmart workers this Saturday, 10 to 12, California Nurses Association office, 2000 Franklin, close to the 19th Street BART station in Oakland. Thank you so much, Pam. And Kimmy, final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I just really encourage folks to support these workers that are organizing. It's really important. We do need a new and an expanded labor movement, and we need folks to really support that and come out and show solidarity with the workers.
And that's Kimmy Lee, National Coordinator with the United Workers Congress. And Josh Idelson, final thoughts?
I think it's really striking what's going on at Walmart, that we've had a decades-long fight in the U.S. between organized labor in this country and this company, and we have never seen it reach this level of industrial action. And I think the difference from what we saw before is the involvement of the workers, along with the air war in the community.
And Josh, just real quick, are any politicians standing up for non-union workers?
There are certainly politicians that have pushed, for example, for an increase in the tipped minimum wage, as well as the non-tipped minimum wage. You may not know, listeners, that restaurant workers only make $2.13 an hour in minimum wage,
right.
And it's because of the Restaurant Opportunity Center that that's now on the agenda.
All right, well, we will definitely continue following this. Josh Idelson covers these issues for Salon and In These Times. Josh, Kimmy, and Pam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and thanks for all of your emails and phone calls. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation about media coverage of the presidential election and the machinery behind the Democratic Party. How are the media covering President Obama's record on domestic and foreign policy, and what's to come? We'll be joined by the Middle East Report's Chris Tozing, Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez, and Time's Michael Shear. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.